Yo, what's up, guys, and welcome to the Movie Newbie. My name's Jibril Sahimi, and I am the newbie.
Oliver Mangum, writer, producer, fellow film lover, occasionally capable of insight.
Raphael Lucas, thespian, cinephile, and human golden retriever.
So yeah, enjoy the show.
Hey guys, before we get started, I just wanted to make a quick note. Me and Raph were splitting one mic on this episode since we had a...
God, I hate this!
You see what's happening. Basically, we're splitting one mic because we had lots of guests on this episode. So if we sound a little strange or we go in and out, that's just because we were getting accustomed to the new setup.
Mom, I'm not okay with this.
Okay, anyway, enjoy the episode and apologies for the technical disturbance.
God, I hate my life!
And back for the second time because of technical difficulties. This is episode 88, and I'm just going to let Raph take it away again.
Yeah, we tried something new, and it did not work. I repeat, it did not work. Abort, abort. But here we go again. Second take. I'm an actor, so we can do this. I'm here with five people. What's going on? Why is the company growing all of a sudden? I know. New voices left and right. I'm here with Manu and Jordan, who I met at White City House for a mixer, a little networking event, and we just hit it off straight off the bat, right?
Yeah.
And what did we talk about? Just movies the whole time.
Yeah, that's it. We did not network at all.
We did not network. No. We networked with each other, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's
it. It worked.
Yeah, we've got a tribe. We've got a tribe, and that's it. That's all we need to do. And then we played pool for the entirety of the night and drank some beers. It was fabulous.
I need to go to White City House.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, next time. Been there next yet. Mixer. Next
Sponsor.
Mixer.
Gonna bleep that shit. No, I'm kidding.
But these are wonderful filmmakers, great directors, just all around gem of humans. Is a sentence that I just said, and they have a great production house that I will now present to you as Soup of the Day Pictures, where they have three brilliant films that I have watched and that I have loved. One of which was released this year, called The Long Shadow, which is a beautiful long take film. Short film, I shall say. And the two others that were released last year, Let's Bounce and The Only One Who Hears You. Brilliant work, guys. I fell in love with your work and I was like, you have to come in the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
So, no, thank you for being here. But now I'm going to pass it on to Ollie, who has to do all of that wonderful speech all over again. It made me cry and it'll probably do it again because I'll cry on cue.
Hold my beer and watch me fuck this up. For the first episode in my theme, which we're calling Bad Romance, sort of a little theme about toxic romances, if you will, we're going to be talking about what might be my favorite film of all time. And yes, apparently I have said that on the podcast about several other films, but this time I mean it, okay? We're going to be talking about Michel Gondry's 2004 sci-fi romance, low-key drama, idea-driven masterpiece, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which stars Mr. Jim Carrey and Mrs. Kate Winslet and a host of other fantastic actors. I have a bit of a history with this film, as I think you guys know. I discovered this film when I was about maybe 11 or 12 years old. I'd seen the advert on a bus. I was entranced by it. I managed to get my hands on a fake DVD, I think, at the time. And I watched it when I was probably far too young to comprehend most of the philosophical ideas that were being put out there. I definitely didn't catch on to the nonlinear narrative. I don't think I realized the beginning was actually the end until probably like fourth or fifth rewatch years later, but I was pretty much obsessed. And I think it wasn't necessarily because of the story, although that definitely did hook me in. It was because of I think the inherently romantic and like sad boy energy. I think emo was the word that one of my guests here used earlier. That definitely caught me on, but also I think it was the DIY filmmaking that I was seeing. I was just starting to get into film. I hadn't ever watched anything like this before. I had budding dreams of getting into filmmaking in the future. And I just fell in love with the homespun sort of DIY craft that I was seeing on screen. I didn't know how these sequences were put together, but it all seemed to be done with practical effects and in-camera effects. And I thought that there was just something really magical and enchanting about that. And my love for this film has just grown ever since. I think, in a way, my relationship to it has evolved over the years. I think at the beginning, we can talk about this later, but at the beginning I saw it as a very romantic film. Then a little bit later, as I got older, I saw it as a very sad film. And now I have different feelings about it altogether. But yeah, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to be objective about this whatsoever. This is a really special film to me, and so I'm very excited to be talking about it. But before I just monologue and do a solo pod about this, I'm going to throw it over to our guests to chat about their thoughts on the film. Manu, how about you?
Yeah, as I was saying before, the technical difficulties. I think we have a... We have a very similar relationship with this film, I think. I also saw it when I was quite young. I must have been like 14, 15. I was quite an emo kid. And I thought this, again, this was the definition of love and romance. And I wanted this. This is what I wanted in life. If I didn't meet my Clementine, I was never going to succeed in life.
Such a you thing to say.
And then I must have watched it like 10 times in the span of that year. I would show it to everyone. Every single time I would get something new from it. I was also getting into filmmaking and like... the craft of it, and I thought, who is this Michel Gondry guy? Like, I've never seen any, like, I don't know who he is. And then I got into more of his films as well, and then just, yeah, I was into Kate Winslet as well. I always say she's my favorite actress, probably still to this day. And I hadn't seen her do anything like this, and I thought, just what a special film, and it elicited a very emotional response in me that, I don't think I've ever watched this without crying, so it is quite a special film to me. So
I had a slightly less intimate experience with it. I think it was, to begin with, I watched it when I was like, you know, when I turned 11 or 12 and I was starting to really kind of watch more and more films and kind of explore more adult films, I guess. Like, I wasn't just watching typical stuff that you would watch as a kid. And I watched Eternal Sunshine because it was on IMDb's top 250. And I was like, yep, I'm going to do that. That's next. And, you know, big Jim Carrey fan. Like, I was like, yeah, cool. I recognize all these people. I didn't know the director. And just went for it. And it was I had a great time. But again, didn't really understand a lot of the concept that was going on. I just remember being kind of taken with it and not really sure why. And then didn't watch it again until literally last night. So I have like, so it's always kind of been in my head as like, oh yeah, Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind is a great movie, but like, yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. You know, that kind of thing.
It's only your second time seeing the film.
My second watch.
Yeah.
So, but honestly, last night it kind of like, I remembered everything, but it felt like for the first time, which is kind of apt for a movie. So, I think it kind of struck me this time how playful it is. It's like, it's kind of endlessly creative in its filmmaking, which I just never think about when I thought of this movie. I always think about the performances and the writings, obviously with Charlie Kaufman, but like, it's, I don't know, it's doing so many things
at once, and
it's crushing all of it. Yeah. I think what's kind of incredible about it is it's editing, and it's so sharp.
Yes.
It's so sharp.
Yes. Right?
And it's, it doesn't waste a second, but it's also like, extremely intimate and beautiful and doesn't feel like it's rushing through anything, but it kind of introduces these high concept ideas to you without explaining anything and you just get it.
Yeah.
I think that's such an incredibly hard thing to do. And it's, I was thinking about it today, it's the kind of, there's not many films that do this, but there are, it's one that I don't think, it's a story that couldn't be told in any other medium. And I really don't think there's many films that can do that. I don't think you can encapsulate this story or the feelings it gives you in a book, in poetry or anything, or music. It's so specifically uses sound and image in a way that I think only movies can. And that's the highest praise I can give it.
See, this is why I'm bringing these guys here. Jeez.
First take.
This is, I guess, kind of similar to you. This is my second watch, and I first watched this movie not as young as everyone else did, like at 11 or 12. I would have probably like not understood what was going on.
You're like 43 when you watched this, right?
Yeah, dude, I was 72. I was on my deathbed.
No, I'm kidding. It's a miracle you're alive.
You look great.
This is what the film does to you.
What moisturizer do you use?
Shit, what was my train? What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So the first time I watched it, I was like, damn, this is a really, really sad movie. And that's the only memory I had of it. Like, I completely forgot pretty much everything in this movie except the, like, not inside his mind parts. So basically what was going on with the doctor, what's his name, Howard or Hayward or something. There's, I always get her name wrong. Kirsten Dunst.
Nice.
Right? Okay. I always get her mixed up with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, Kirsten Dunst, like that stuff, that was the only thing that I remembered. But then when I watched it this time, I was like, the editing was really on point. Like, I thought that was amazing how they just jumped from there. There's that scene where they're in Times Square or Central Station in New York, and people start like
Penn Station.
Yeah, people started like kind of like disappearing, like popping, and I was like, that was amazing how that worked, especially for 2004. I thought it was really cool, and it's pretty seamless. But also at times I found the pace too fast for me. Like, it was like you have to be glued to the screen, and if you're not, you're going to miss something. So, yeah. But it is a rewatchable.
Yeah.
It is definitely a rewatchable, so I want to watch it again sometime soon. Mm. Yeah. I actually just watched it. Like, I finished at 6 and I came here.
Nice. Yeah. Very fresh. Yeah. Very fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I similar experiences. Again, I think I was around the ages of, I don't know, prepubescent. I was prepubescent. That's what I'll say. And I didn't get it. I was like, wow, this is amazing, but I don't get it. And I'm sure I will once I'm older and I have more life experiences, because that's what this movie really gives you, is it enriches your experience as you gain experience. So it can be such a personal film, because as you grow older, you can get it more, or you can feel it more. And someone that experienced heartbreak, someone that's fallen in and out of love, my God, this film destroyed me. Like, I think, and I'm having goosebumps now just thinking about it, because it is that kind of romantic film that gives you all the feels that you would need, at least for me. That I know that, like, I cry every time the house breaks down and he has to erase her, and you have to let it go. You have to let go of love, and that's so fucking hard. And I think this movie, I was introduced by this movie thanks to Amélie, actually. Amélie is the kind of the path that I took. I was like, okay, this is a great French film. And now I got like Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. Because they're kind of like two pieces of the same cloth, those films. There's like such a optimistic sadness to it, almost.
Yeah. That's what one of my notes was like, damn, this is a sad movie, but sweet at the same time.
Yeah, it's got a bit of both. And it's just, it's so cerebral in its creativity, and yet so profound in its poetry. So yeah, this movie gives me all the feels, and yeah, I definitely cried upon rewatch, for sure.
It has like a kind of a really strong melancholy about it, right? Like, it's kind of like, because it's the idea of like looking back on a memory, but also interacting with it at the same
and
time.
And knowing you're losing
it
as well.
Which is so hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, what can be more sort of indulgent, but also melancholy than trying to actually reflect back on like the breakup of a relationship? But then the idea of having to experience it again in reverse, but then also trying to fight against it. It's kind of like a great metaphor, I think, for the sort of relationship we have with our own memories and with people that we've had to move on from, or that we're trying to move on from.
Before we get into a favorite scene, I will like to say that upon this rewatch, because my grandpa is now suddenly suffering from dementia, this movie gave me that overarching theme of dementia, of like forgetting or forgetfulness or loss of memory. I don't know. It just kind of brought that up for the first time, that I was like, oh shit.
You get that with Clementine a lot in it, when she just gets home and it's like, what's wrong with me? What's happening?
Yeah.
Or just like, and just like the erasing of memory. Literally, like, I will erase you. And that's what happens with dementia. It's like entire.
I mean, we do need to get to the category. Yeah. But like, see, this is the. But like, I think there's that idea that it does present like a philosophical idea about psychic consciousness or memory not being all there is to a person, because there is this idea put forth that if you lose your memories of one another, there is still something, a connection. There's like an emotional, it's almost like a spiritual connection between these two characters. So it makes you hope that for someone suffering through that condition, that their identity is still there somewhere, you know? Yeah. Favorite scene, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to throw it over to our guests first.
Damn evil.
Oh, well, we can go first if you want to, but that's our policy here.
Yeah.
It's a polite thing to do, I think.
Appreciate it.
I'm going to let Jordan go first then. This time.
Okay. So, I don't know. I was struggling with this a lot. Not just because like, oh, everything, yeah, all the scenes are great kind of thing. But like,
but literally.
Yeah, it's true. But there's a few bits that kind of stick out in my mind, and I don't want to mention, I really don't want to do the last scene, just because it's so kind of, for me anyway, not to, if anyone's picked it, obviously.
by all means. But
I didn't pick it.
I wanted to avoid that because I figured someone else is probably going to want to talk about it as well. But my favorite scene, I think, is when they're talking on the couch and she first kind of introduces the idea of like retreating back into childhood memories. We talked about it on the way here. About
we figured we would have the best,
but we didn't see it. Yeah. And I think it's when it starts raining. Yeah. Okay. Just to quickly go through it, I think there's something so beautiful about being able to capture where some shots look like photographs, and it has one of my favorite shots I think ever in this moment. So you know when you kind of get this. The rain starts coming in and he's thinking about his childhood and it's like, oh my God, he's opening himself up so like raw to her. And does the image of the kid looking out the window at the bike, mm-hmm. I think is one of the prettiest things I've seen. Cause that's just, it feels like such a vintage photo of like, you just, that's big. A picture tells 1,000 words, right? That's just, I was just like, okay, I know everything I need to know. And then the kind of it bridging reality and memory in one, so that you know, mm-hmm. you kind of, the camera swings to the right and then the wet bike is there, and then you've got John Bryan's Row comes in, which I think is one of the prettiest pieces of music in a film. And it's the whole scene is about, I don't know, maybe a minute and a half long, something like that, but I think that's kind of, that encapsulates why I like this movie, because it has the kind of the like little playfulness I mentioned about the filmmaking. It has the kind of, you know, the kind of Texas witches and the fun camera stuff, but also has that gorgeous score and just the intimacy of being able to interact with a childhood memory and bringing someone into it. Mm-hmm. And just, oh man, I could talk about the scene forever, but that's my favorite scene. I think
beautiful, too beautiful.
Yeah. Well, same.
Great. Cool. Moving on.
For slightly different reasons though. To me, it has a lot to do with the score. I think Row is my favorite piece of score ever. I will go as far as to say it is. And I think this...
Don't one-up me.
I know. And this scene is one of my favorite merges of image and score in film. I think when it hits and you see... It's like a POV shot of him with the boots on as a kid, and he goes in the rain and he starts going through the nursery rhyme and stuff. The score is so beautiful. I don't think there's been any piece of piano music specifically in a film that hits me like this. And also the idea that that's the moment where you kind of start realizing what the film's going to do and how they're going to start trying to like run away from the erasing and stuff. Mm-hmm. That is just such a impactful moment. And it always has been. Like, I have that on my Spotify playlist, like my regular Spotify playlist full of normal music. I just have this and suddenly I'm like, sometimes I'm shuffling it and it comes on and I like, oh, I don't know if I want this right now, but I always listen to it.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're mentioning the music quite early on, because that's definitely always one of my favorite parts of the movie. And I think it does a lot of the emotional, it carries a lot of the emotional weight in the film, which is not to say that the rest of the elements aren't as good, but I just think you're talking about elements that are so in sync with one another. And John Bryan is one of my favorite film composers of all time. He's done a lot of other great scores. You can check out his work on Spotify. But yeah, whenever I'm writing or doing something creative, I do put that in there with my other film score playlists, and I listen to it all the time. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, right? You mentioned that there's so many scenes that are just gloriously good in this movie. It was hard to pick, and I won't do that last scene either, because I know that one just gets me all the time. So I'll do just a simple scene of them lying on the ice, because that's also the poster shot right there. And I'm like, poster shot, poster shot. And I love a movie that does that, that has a poster in its film. You know, that's when you know it's got great cinematography behind it. And I forget the cinematographer, Kraus, is that her name? Ellen Kuras. There's just such a beauty to cinematography. And it's just a beautiful, beautifully laid, composed shot of them both when they're both in love, when they're both like, you know, intimate and talking about the stars. And there's just something so beautiful and simple about it.
So the movie in one shot.
Literally, mm-hmm. literally. And also, but what's beneath them is ice, and it cracks just there's like their love.
Massive crack.
And you can see like a big crack in the actual ice. So it just, so much is there for such a
that
simple
kind of
shot.
Frozen state that's going to fade at some point.
That's permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get the Elijah Wood parallel as well.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I'm like, Elijah, get out of here. Leave. Go back to the Shire, man. You're better there.
Shave, man.
Hey, it was 2004. We don't know what we were doing in 2004. But yeah, so that's me.
Yeah. For me, like, it was interesting that you mentioned the rain. There was like that happened a lot throughout the movie when, like, it's just off the bat, I think for me was the credit sequence in the beginning of the film where he's crying and driving the car and listening to the tape. And yeah, 18 minutes in, and like you said, it looks kind of like a picture. And there's a moment where he throws the cassette out of the window and it lands on the floor, and you see the car kind of just drive away, and it goes slowly out of focus, and you see the red lights just kind of fade into the distance. And I just thought it looked incredibly beautiful. Like, I don't think the score really, I didn't really pay attention to the music. I don't know if it's because there's just so much going on visually for me, but the only two moments where the music did hit home was the final scene. Well, not the final scene, but that last bit where they're like walking in the montage and stuff, and then during the opening credits. And I usually hate opening credits. I usually just skip through them. But this is the first time where I was like, oh, and I was like reading the people's names. Like, I don't ever do that
because I miss them.
I am the newbie. but yeah, this is the first time that I actually paid attention to that. So it must have been something going on, at least with the way that it looked and how the credits were shown and what was good. Because I always get distracted. But in this one, I was not. Like, I could see the letters. I could see him doing things, and it felt balanced to me. So yeah, that was my favorite scene.
I mean, similarly, it's really hard to pick one, not just because there are so many great scenes, but this is a bit of a cliche to say, but it does all feel like they're of a piece, or this movie does work at such a clip, like such a fast clip, that it's kind of hard to like zero in on one particular moment. But I think even though what I love about the film is, like you said, the playfulness and sort of the formal daring of it all, I'm going to go with one of the quieter moments. I think it's sort of on their first date, which is actually, I guess, in the, where it gets complicated, in the later period. It's in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
After the memory erasure, yeah. But it's at the beginning, pre-credits. And
yes.
They've had their little meet cute on the train, and then she invites him up to hers. And it's like really cringy and kind of awful, actually, because she's, she's trying to initiate something. He's incredibly uncomfortable and just wants to get out of there as soon as possible. So this has all the recipes for like these people will never see each other again. This would be a scene from a comedy or something. And then he leaves the house, and then she calls after him. And then he smiles because she says, call me when you get home. And then speaking of music, I think it's called Phone Call by John Bryan comes on. Then he gets home to his really sad apartment on his own. And then he just sits on an armchair. And then after like twiddling his thumbs for a few moments, he just grabs the phone and calls her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got the biggest grin on her face when she picks up straight away. And I feel like that taps into a truth of this movie, which is that maybe they're not actually that well suited for each other. Like, they have really clashing personalities. But at their heart, they're two very lonely people. And I think that that's at least part of what drives their attraction to one another. So I like that it was connecting something there, that even though he couldn't wait to get out of that apartment or her apartment, he had to call her as soon as he got home.
Yeah.
And I just love the tension that there was there.
Do you think that interaction would have happened if they all had iPhones on the train?
Hell no.
Right? Be on like Tinder or something?
Yeah. Armchair moment.
No drawing on the train.
Yeah. I think she'd super like him.
Oh yeah, none of that Bumble stuff. Wow, some beautiful scenes, guys. Amazing. Yeah. I love
good
it.
Job, everyone.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say like a little sneak peek and like a sneaky one. Not my favorite scene, but the scene when when he was a toddler, like his most embarrassing scene where he like hammers the bird.
Oh,
and then,
yeah.
But I like the way it was shot where you don't see the kids' faces and they still had the voices. I don't know what it was about that reminded me of like Sesame Street or like something like as childlike as that. Yeah.
I almost picked that as my favorite scene as well. I think the way he shoots that scene is amazing. Because you have that moment where they, you know, he has the embarrassing moment and she kind of ushers him away. And it's the shot where they're, it kind of, the camera doesn't follow them.
Yeah.
And it just lets them walk. And you think like, oh, I wonder what they're talking about. I wonder what's happening there. And it's not, it doesn't let you in. It's like memory only goes so far.
Yeah. Man, we just adore this film, don't we, guys?
Yeah.
We can keep going All right, favorite performance. This is also going to be a tough cookie, I'm pretty sure. But okay, do you guys want to start it?
I think
start
this is
off?
Manu.
Go for it. Manu?
I'm going to go with a weird one because I love everyone in this film. And I think everyone is maybe at their career best in this film. But I think in this rewatch, because every time I watch it, it's someone else. But this rewatch, Elijah Wood absolutely killed it for
Brings
me.
Brings it home for you.
There's a moment where I was watching the film with these questions in mind and stuff. There's a moment where Mary is her name, I think. I can't remember Mark Ruffalo's name in it.
Steve?
Or Stan, maybe?
Stan.
When Mary gets to the apartment and she... I think her and Stan are making out. And then Elijah would just go, that's hot. I was like, that's the best performance in this film by far. Because in such a... there's so many things going on and then suddenly you get this like almost like comic relief moment.
Yeah.
And it is quite... It's a funny film. Like, especially with them two in the house like doing whatever, not paying attention to the erasing. But yeah, I think Elijah Wood just nails this like... I don't know. He's like the first incel, maybe.
Yeah, I wrote down like the early iterations of both incels and like the nice guy TM.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's like he nails this like just the sad. I think he's actually the saddest character in the film.
Yeah,
truly. He must be so alone and sad that he has to do this, and it's such a like a boundary overstepping and just I don't know. I think to get into the head, I mean. As actors and stuff, you must know about this, but like to get into the head of someone so weirdly like sinister and like interesting and complex in a film that is full of people who are, to most people watching this, much more interesting, I think is like outstanding.
And he to detach yourself from Frodo Baggins as well, right?
Exactly.
There's no easy feat.
It's probably right after he shot that. So,
yeah, exactly. Literally
it's
as well.
Such a different character as well. Yeah.
So good for him to like step out of his those boundaries and to
When did he do Green Street? Was it?
That was 2005, like, I think.
2000. So right after
right
this.
Right after this. Yeah. Would be. Yeah, he was on a. Yeah, he was on a street.
I think he was in Spy Kids as well.
Was he?
Spy Kids 3D.
Spy 3D. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He is.
Yeah. He's the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
And Sin City as a creepy character as well.
Freaky in
Yeah. Very freaky. Shout out to
Elijah Wood Appreciation
Podcast. Yeah, we appreciate you. Jordan, favorite performance?
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go really boring, but I think it is just to the best point. Maybe the best performance in the movie for me is Jim Carrey. I think he's absolutely incredible. I think it's also like, I think one of the reasons I like it so much is because it doesn't, it's obviously not the type of thing you'd expect him to do, but I think he uses what he's so like his, you know, greatest strengths in this movie and inverts them. So like his physicality is everything in this film. He's normally so good at using his body. And in here, he just kind of brings himself in. He's so kind of like small and he kind of like the way he like looms over people and just kind of, you know, like he's like, sorry to be there. Like, it's like, he's kind of like, he looks like he's intruding on everyone. And yeah, I think he's just absolutely incredible. Like there were just the way his delivery is amazing. His delivery of okay at the end is heartbreaking and just beautiful, and that's kind of, you know, that's such a, I mean, it's a great line, don't get me wrong, like the way that is, it's amazing, but his delivery is everything, and heartbreaking, and just I mean a lot of it's the writing as well. I think obviously he has a great script to work with, but I think what I like so much about that character as well is that it, the script gives him this kind of, he's such a benign presence, he's such a, like, he doesn't have a lot about him, does he? Like, she says, you know, I don't know what you think about, what's your journal, I want to see your journal, like I don't know what you do, where do you go, kind of thing.
His life is boring.
Yeah, he's boring. And he's kind of without this kind of life and energy, but then you have this great character detail that he sketches and draws, and it's like, well, that's there, you get, that's your glimpse into his energy and what he's like, but then, you know, that's deeper than what he can show.
No. I'll say the same thing as you. Jim Carrey for me was the standout. I mean, again, incredible performances from everyone, especially Kate as well. But for me, Jim Carrey, you know, having grown up in the 90s and watching this guy like making me laugh all over, seeing such a subdued, so nuanced performance from, and I love when a comedic actor suddenly brings in the drama. And I'm like, damn.
I think there's something like depressing that comedians can like bring. I feel like that's
what makes clown, them right? Funny. Yeah, it's there. Yeah. There's something inherently sad about a clown.
Just
right?
like so, he's so in control of everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
of his whole body.
So like, you know, Bryan Cranston, Bob Odenkirk, like they did it as well. And I just love when you get to see Robin Williams. I love when you get to see that because suddenly it changes your whole perspective on an actor, and you're like, oh my God, the talent.
It's like The Last of Us, the guy from Parks and Rec.
Nick Offerman.
Like I thought that was a performance. And
100%.
And you get like little glimpses of it as well when he's getting on the train. You know, when he's cruising into the train, getting through the door. That looked like you could be in Buster Keaton or like Mr. Bean.
Absolutely. Like, I also wrote down Jim Carrey. I do have another option just to give a shout out to someone else, but just to that point, I also think Jim Carrey, this is his probably best performance I think he's ever given on screen. But I think also it's like a masterstroke, in terms of casting, because of what you play with the audience expectations in terms of like meta commentary, because I think we're supposed to see this character as like, very buttoned up and reserved. But in order to appreciate that there might be something interesting about him, there's something worthy about him that you would make him the subject of this story, is that as an audience, you, especially in 2004, people were probably going to the cinema expecting him to be the typical Jim Carrey, but they were denied that for at least the first half an hour or so of this film. And so it's almost like you're waiting for this manic energy to come out, but it doesn't. So you get the sense that this is a character who's locked up all of his emotions inside of him. And through this process, in this sort of memory rebellion process, he sort of steps out of himself a bit, and he does find ways to express what matters to him, which is in this case his memories of Clementine. So I think it's fantastic casting, really, in terms of how it plays with expectations. But I would just quickly give a shout out to, I think, like you said, Manu, everyone's great in this film. I think the supporting characters are so well cast, but I want to give a shout out to Tom Wilkinson. I don't think I've seen him in anything in the last few years, but he was in everything there for a while.
Yeah.
Another British actor, but has a flawless American accent.
I didn't know until very recently.
Yeah, that he was British. He's like from Yorkshire or something. Yeah.
Everyone is British, I think.
Yeah, that is true. Almost every actor is British. Yeah, no. Even Raph is, surprisingly. Raph's English. Wouldn't know it, But I think I loved his performance because there was a really, like, the banality of evil to his character. I don't think he's necessarily evil, but there's something so menacing about what he does. And actually, I think about, you know, you could debate this about his influence on Kirsten Dunst's character, yet he plays it so down the middle and he seems so harmless at first. And he's almost playing it like he's like an optometrist or something.
Yeah.
He is literally, as he says at one point, causing brain damage to people for a living and robbing them of memories at one of their, at a crisis point in their lives. So I really like that performance.
It's tough because, everyone had an amazing performance in this movie and everyone had their moment of showing like just an awesome performance. So for me, I wanted to start off with Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, but then I thought everyone else would choose them. So I want to go with Mark Ruffalo. In the end, when he sees Kirsten Dunst's character carrying out the stuff, and then he like confesses his love for her when she is like clearly not in the right headspace. I thought that was also just a very like subtle, projection of what he was feeling. And I think that's what this movie does well, is it shows what maybe love, like the difference between love and obsession, or love and lust, or something like that. And and it's also funny how he always plays like a doctor or like a technician or something, and like, what's the deal with that? I just clocked it, actually.
He found his niche.
Also, I love that character. He plays that character so well. That stereotype of like the indie kid, or the, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe like the punk guy, but who's just like mansplaining the clash to this girl.
Yeah, it's the best.
Only fan that matter. Mark Ruffalo is very charming, but he does manage to like play those really arrogant, obnoxious notes so well in this character. He's great.
Well, favorite quote, y'all, and that's going to be a toughie as well, because it's Charlie goddamn Kaufman. Do we have anything straight off the bat that we want to say?
Yeah, I guess so. So this is not, it's not really about the quote itself, but it's about what it does in the scene.
Nice.
And what it caps off. And it's, so there's a moment right after they meet, I guess, right at the end of the film. When they're going back in the car, it's Jim Carrey in the back of the car and he's with David Cross and the other girl, what's her name? Yeah, they're there. Yes, who are both great, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
They both have like a
shout
scene
out
each.
To the entire ensemble of this movie.
And they're like, you don't even see them, but they're like asking him about, oh, we saw you were talking to a girl, whatever. And it ends with him saying she was just a girl. My God. Oh, and that's...
You stole a mine.
Right after... There you go.
There he goes. You can see the fury.
Son of a bitch.
It's such a succinct... Because it's also right after we've seen, which is genius, through the window of the car, all the, like... It's not even a montage, but you get, like, the vignettes of, like, other people's lives and stuff, and the car is reminiscent of Michel Gondry's music video for the Chemical Brothers he did with the train.
Yes.
Star or something. I can't remember what the song is called. Star. Yeah. You get those moments by the window, and then he caps off with that line, which is just like the last thing that he has to forget, kind of. And it's interesting because obviously it goes backwards, but it's not like Tenet where it's like backwards. It's like chunks in reverse order, and that's where the last chunk ends. And
that's what gets me.
I'd never cried at that part any other time watching the film, and maybe it's because of life or whatever now. And like where I am now, but yeah, that moment was like the last thing he's holding on to, and then he has to just, she was just a girl, she was not like, she was just a girl,
so simple yet so complex.
Yeah. There was
much weight in that one line,
especially after that big scene in the house and everything.
Of course, just encapsulates everything.
I think it's, she was just perfect.
A girl. Jordan,
wow,
how do we top that?
Yeah, so I think like I went back to the bit in the crumbling house. I think there's, and it's less of a direct quote. It's more of like it's a response to someone else's line. But Clementine says like, "What if you stayed this time?" And he says, "I walked out the door. There's no memory left." And then she says, "Come back and make up a goodbye. At least let's pretend we had one." I think "let's pretend we had one" is so sad. And I don't know what else to say about it. It just like that gets me so much. That's such an amazing concept.
Nothing to say.
There's nothing to say.
It's all said right there. So many heartbreaking lines. I think I'm just going to go for one myself, which is the big, you know, kind of the big shout, the big screech for, it's like the big plea, but it's when Jim Carrey says, "Please just let me keep this memory just this one. Yeah. I was like,
crawling on the bed.
I was going super Saiyan in that one. Just because it's so guttural, it's so primal, it's so like, and I know I felt like that when I was, you know, falling out of love with someone. It's like, that is what you do inside of you. You're like, and you don't want to like, because you have to move on, but then there's so much that you just don't want to, you know. It's so much like keeping you here, and it's that one gets me.
Well, I think that's the thing with like breaking up, like if you try and forget everything, then it's just not going to work, but eventually you just remember the good, which is kind of but I'm going to go with a little bit more positive one, because I was going to go with a very negative one until everyone was like, meh. So this was when they, before the credits, when they went on their first date and they go back to her place, is it? When basically she's like, "Drink up, young man, it'll make the whole seduction part less repugnant." Yeah. That made me really laugh because I think everybody's been on a first date like that where they're like, come on, you know, it's time to like get
something.
It on. Yeah.
But you've been in that version of the flat with like the potato figurines. And you're like, what is
you're just
this
looking
person?
Around, you're like,
I made a mistake.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really nice, sweet moment. And then it was like full of tears afterwards as the movie goes on.
Movie can be also hilarious. It's very funny. It's very funny. And like lines like that are hilarious. And Kate brings on that comedy too.
Exactly.
Can I give two quotes since this is my movie, my theme, and my favorite film of all time? Okay, thank you. Sorry. I was expecting someone to pick up one of these earlier, so I wrote multiple down. But okay, first I'm going to start with a sad, with kind of like a depressing one, and then I'll go with a happy one. So I actually really like Joel's journal. Like whenever he's narrating bits from his journal, like this sounds like it's ripped right out of my brain or some what I would have written in a journal when I was a teenager, actually, talking of emo boys. Yeah. And so when he wrote, are we like those bored couples you feel sorry for in restaurants? Are we the dining dead? I can't stand the idea of us being a couple. People think that about. And if you've been in sort of like a relationship that's waning down, then I think you can relate to that feeling where like you're forcing it a little bit or you're struggling to start any sort of positive conversation. And so that hit me in the feels for sure. But then I think the line that's always stuck with me the most, and I've definitely quoted or perhaps stolen the most when I've been in similar situations, is when they're lying on the ice, it's on the poster, and he says, I could die right now, Clem. I'm just happy. I've never felt that before. I'm just exactly where I want to be. And I think that idea that at your most happiest or your most content, that's when you're like, you could kill me right now or life could end right here, because at least it would end on a high note and I'd feel safe. It's just a really nice idea.
Elijah Wood butchers it as well.
Yeah. I mean, Elijah Wood, I think, perfected it. Really. Yes. Just gave his own spin on it. He made it funnier, I thought. He went up at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, he's definitely going to be next week's guest.
Oh, Elijah, please. If you're listening.
Yeah, Elijah, please. We'd love to have you. We'll watch all of Lord of the Rings. Yeah. What do we got next? We got the armchair moment, don't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is going to be tough.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be interesting.
I guess.
Is there anything to fix?
I don't think there's anything to fix.
Any critiques?
Well, maybe we could use that as like a what if. Yeah. So if you like switch.
Well,
you mentioned
the pace, right? You said something about.
Well,
like,
it's not really like it's not really a negative thing, but it's the kind of movie that you just have to be glued to the screen.
Sure.
You just have to be like.
No Wi-Fi.
I was watching it with a friend because I have a friend visiting, and he kept like asking me for like, "Hey, do you want a glass of water?" Or like,
not now. I'm crying. Yeah,
like, where's the juice? And it's just like, dude, shut up, man.
Yeah. I watched it with my girlfriend this morning, which is a risky move. and she kept being like, she got a message at one point. And I was like, no, this is important.
Yeah,
like, every part is important.
So exactly, yeah, I was like, come on, like you're gonna miss it.
You're gonna miss this line, this very specific line that's about everything in the film.
You're gonna miss okay. The way he says okay.
Yeah. Like he got a notification halfway through. He's like, dude. Wrexham's gonna try and buy Gareth Bale, and I'm like, dude, watch the movie, man.
Wrexham,
is that true though?
I have no idea, man. So if anybody wants to do like a little what if, or
I mean, I'm not
armchair.
Gonna no, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend like there's something I would suggest that would improve this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I this is not so a little twist on the question.
Mm-hmm.
I in my research today, I discovered that Tracy Morgan was actually shot a couple of scenes for this movie, but was
no
cut
way.
Out. And I love Tracy Morgan, and I'm not saying it would have improved the movie. I think this movie's perfect, but I also say, release the Tracy cut.
Release the Tracy
cut. Tracy Morgan was playing his neighbor, and I'm like, I want to see Tracy Morgan.
Like another neighbor?
Another
or that
neighbor.
Same,
oh. Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
Do it. Can you imagine him and Jim Carrey interacting?
Yeah. Hysterical. Also, that neighbor really made me laugh.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he was just
Frank.
Like, yeah, Frank. Shut up, Frank. yeah. Do you guys have anything to add to that?
Go on, man.
Well, I watched it through the lens of having to think of something. So I was like, the only moment where I thought, I don't love this choice is, and which is crazy because I think this is one of the best scores ever. The music near the beginning when they meet on the train, when they re-meet on the train, I don't love, it's quite quizzical and stuff. I know Jordan doesn't like this kind of thing at all.
I have a thing.
About when films do the kind of like, boop,
with the whimsical,
boop, boop,
yeah.
It tells you how you're supposed to.
Yeah. Not even that, because a lot
Williams.
Of films like.
Lot and more.
But yeah, I think it could have done without music if I had to think of
but
something.
But they did something on purpose, right? They did the whole quite, like when they're talking, there's music, when there's.
Yeah,
because
I read that they were supposed to do the opposite. And then Michelle Gondry was like, change that.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I wouldn't change anything about this film, but if I had
it's
to,
cool. It's cool. It's all right.
Gone to my head, I had to change something. That would be it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna dunk on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But,
no.
But I think I have stuff where I'm like, oh, that's just not for me in the same, you know, I prefer other ways of doing it. But I guess like, oh, okay. So like, I think the way they shot it, is I think it's lit nicely. I don't love the way it looks. It's not my favorite thing in the world. I looked into how they were shooting it, and it sounds super interesting the way they kind of let it was kind of up to the actors to kind of use the space a lot, and they kind of the way they kind of, I think Michel Gondry spoke to the cameraman and was like, you know, you directed them live. And
I think there was two cameras running
at the same time.
Very improvisational.
So that Kate and Jim could kind of move freely, which is like, you know, it works for the movie. But sometimes I'm like, you know what? That's not the prettiest. That's not the, you know, sometimes as sharp as the editing is, sometimes I'm like, oh, I can see where you had to kind of like.
It's a bit like how they shoot Succession.
Same sort of thing where
that,
it works.
Documentary
it,
style.
Works really well, but I think
cinema
like,
vérité.
As someone who likes it when the camera's really involved and controlled, it's I think sometimes the camera works a blessing and a curse. Well, yeah, it works really well for it.
That's one of my favorite visual styles is the raw kind of like unfiltered, uncontrolled.
Yeah.
Because it's as an actor, I like that visually, but in terms of acting.
Yeah.
That kind of like improvisational, raw, authentic kind of, and that's where you get some of the most brilliant moments. And I do think that it leans in, especially for this film, like you said, for this film it works because it does tend to show, for me at least in this viewing, it leans into the cerebral memory of it because there are some out of focus shots and I'm like, shit, is that his memory? Is that like,
yeah,
there,
no, in, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So,
yeah. But I also don't want to, there is so much of this that is controlled. There is so much, you can't do. Yeah. The in-camera stuff they want to do without knowing exactly how it is. So I can't, with a straight face, say, oh, you know, I don't like how it looks because it's lit really well and it's beautifully designed.
So cool. Every time they shoot with like a big spotlight on the camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh. But also like I heard that Michel Gondry, even as controlled as everything is, he likes that very, for lack of a better word, naturalistic aesthetic. So he wanted it to be all available lighting or diegetic lighting and the cinematographer Ellen Kuras said, you know, I think she was a fan of it being a bit more lit, or she wanted to use more light, so she actually would sneak light bulbs around the set without telling the director, and they would get into fights a lot just so that you know she could light it a little better.
I think it just has that early 2000s look that is not always for me. You know?
And I'm usually not a fan of like the handheld camera personally, as unless it's employed right. And I think I do quite like how it's used here because for a stylized and, as you said, as clearly planned and well thought out as the sequences are, it has this sense of like urgency as well that I think works when you're dealing with the memories too.
Again, it's like it leans with the themes that it's trying to say. It's not like Paul Greengrass, you know, Bourne Supremacy, where it's like, you know. So we've got nothing. We just adore this film. Critics. So we could probably guess what our ratings are going to be.
Well, there's a bonus question.
There's a bonus. Yeah. There's a mystery question.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
oh, yeah.
Which, I totally forgot about that.
So I only remembered about halfway through recording this episode while you guys were talking that I was supposed to come up with a mystery because I haven't done it in a few months. So so it's a little half-baked, but bear with me. So I was literally just racking my brain for a question while we were recording for the last 20 minutes. And I was thinking about asking, you know, would you get someone erased from your memory, or are there any memories that you would like to erase? And I just thought that's going to be way too personal, especially for our guests here who we don't know super well. So instead, I'll say this. Okay, if you were rebelling against the memory erasure procedure like Joel is, and you had to hide you and someone else in a certain part of your memory, where would you go? And again, if you don't want to get too personal, you can keep it abstract. That's my question. It can just be a positive time in your life, I suppose.
If no one has, I guess I can just like spitball here. I would like to say that I would keep all my memories because that's what formulates my life. And without them, I wouldn't be who I am now.
Boring.
Where would I? The thing is, like, you have to go deep, right? You have to be somewhere where no one can trace you. All right, give me five.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah, I'm realizing it's such a cerebral question.
I would have to hide somewhere. I also wouldn't delete anything. FYI. But I think you'd have to hide somewhere so fragmented in your own head that you don't quite remember it as well.
Yeah, I think that
would make the most
good.
Sense to me. Something I remember only in fragments, to the point where maybe you're not even there.
Yeah. Almost like it feels like you're not sure if it's a memory or a dream.
Yeah. I think that kind of space would probably be the best for hiding it.
Yeah.
I don't know the technology they used to find you. Yeah.
For example, would dreams work? Because you remember dreams.
That's
and those are abstracts as shit, so.
Yeah.
This is a whole other podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Rogan, where you at?
I mean, we could just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what's hard with it as well is you're trying to retrace memories that you probably blocked out for a reason, and you're trying to get to those places because no one would know. Because you blocked them out,
and you're also bringing that person to that place as well. So you have to show them that.
You have to show them that world.
Do you want that?
Okay. Well, I'd go. Look at my memories of going to Universal Studio. No, Disneyland when I was like six or something. Because if you're going to hang out with someone else, you might as well bring them somewhere fun to hide in, right? So
that's true.
Lots of people there.
Disneyland. Exactly. You could escape in the crowds.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
I think I have a good one. Yeah. The first time I was in one of those massive like wave pools at a water park. I think I was like maybe 5 or 6 years old, and that shit was awesome. Just everyone like, woo! And that would be fun. Yeah, I think that would be a cool place to go. Yeah, just say a nice memory.
It's a nice memory.
Nice memory time.
Okay. Should we go on to ratings then?
Let's just do ratings, yeah.
This could be very quick as well. I mean, no, I don't want to assume everyone has the same answer as me, but you know how what it's going to be. Yeah, it's 10 out of 10 Baby Joels for me. Come on, we didn't mention Baby Joel yet. The scene when he's in the
table?
The sink. Yeah, bro. Yeah. Bathing in the sink is so cute.
I
want to be there.
I will give it 10 out of 10 changing hairs of Clementine's. Wow, that's horrible. I will give it 10 out of 10 multicolored Clementine hair.
Yeah, hairstyles.
Nailed it.
Also
Clementine hairstyles.
It's not hair dye. It's
hairstyles.
Hairstyles. There 10 out of 10 Clementine hairstyles.
There you go. Got there in the end.
Wow.
I'm going to give it also a 10 out of 10 potato dolls.
I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 stolen chicken pieces.
Yeah, and I think, drum roll please.
Oh!
10 out of 10. Missed days at work.
Oh my, this is the first time we've ever got 10 out of 10 across the board.
I mean, with 5 people, this is, yeah.
Wow.
We still need to come up with bumper music for when
that
happens.
I think just now, I'm going to clip that.
Just take it.
Duh. Yeah.
Or I think we could put in like the E.T. music, you know, when he goes home. Like, because this is entering the pantheon of 10 out of 10 movies.
Nice.
Just, X-Files just came in. Do-do-do-do. I don't know what.
All right. Amazing. Well. Thank you for being here, Manu.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us. Yeah,
thanks so much.
Hopefully, it's not terrible, and you can release this.
I mean,
shit,
it's a 10 out of 10.
Technical difficulties. We're gonna have to do it again.
Yeah, I imagine.
Take 3.
We'll let you back in like a few weeks. We need to record
ADR.
It again.
Yeah, ADR.
Yeah. Well, So the usual stuff at the end of a podcast. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, comment. Give us the 5-star rating, please. I know we've been asking for it, but we haven't been getting it. We haven't been getting any reviews. We need more reviews, please.
And please check out Soup of the Day Pictures
as
well and their work. Thank you again for joining us, guys.
Do you want to shout out anything? Anything that you need?
Shout out anything, Manu. Do the shout outs.
Watch our films, yeah.
Yeah, watch our short films.
Yeah, yeah, there it is.
And like them.
Yeah, and like them and enjoy them. Yeah.
What's the website or the socials?
We're at superthedaypictures. Mm-hmm. And on Instagram, we're at superthedaypictures, I think.
Yeah, I think that's
pretty sure.
You'll get everything from there. You can follow us if you want. And also just check out the films. We have stuff coming out all the time. So enjoy.
Nice.
See you later.